if they're coming out the gate at the same time I am with the same traffic and with, bring it on. You don't have to worry. And you might be a completely different view on this. I'm not sure, but I love perceived value. If the manufacturer is coming out at $10, why not sell mine for $49? Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka the Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing a variety of different things that helps bring your product to retail. And these are the nuggets that people just don't know. And I've got a specialist. He's been on the podcast a few times. Can't wait to talk to him. But first, before we do that, let's have a word from our sponsor. Facing cash flow challenges with your e-commerce business? Discover Viably, your ultimate financial ally. From real-time sales data integrations to immediate funding access, Viably is here to support you. Plan your growth with their free tool for online sellers and engage with specialists whenever you need. Extend your cash flow with Viably. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and welcome back, Stephen.
Hello. Hello from Guangzhou, China. And I'm feeling that FOMO like you are. It looks like, I got to tell you, it looks like the parties are great. We'll still see.
The parties are always great in Vegas. Oh my gosh. I'm too old for these parties. You see, if you've never gone to Prosper, there's the first party, which usually starts at around dinner time. So somebody's going to throw a party around dinner time. After dinner, so 8-ish to 11, there's another party. And then at the 11, 12 mark, you go to a nightclub and you dump out of there at around 4 in the morning. I don't know about you, but I am getting too old for that.
I was in a taxi cab today and I was thinking, boy, it'd be very cool to do a 4 a.m. brunch, just a brunch party for everyone who's you know, crawling out of clubs at 4 o'clock in the morning, ready to do breakfast and then sleeping late the next morning. That could be a lot of fun.
Who knows? Next Prosper. I almost did that with Mikhail Chapnik when I went to Vegas a couple of weeks ago. We went for dim sum and it was like an all night thing. But okay. So let's talk about what you're doing, Steve. So I've been listening to stuff that you've done in the past. It's been awesome. The guests that you bring on are, it's awesome. I like the way that you talk about the little things that people don't do, especially in product development. Can we start there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's so easy to get focused on the marketing, on competing, and frankly, on all the distractions that Amazon's going to throw your way because they are Amazon. But at the end of the day, it's people buying products and using the products and happy that they're using their products and so on. And in fact, I'm going to touch on that happy right now because I'll be talking to Alibaba about this in about 24 hours or so. Right now, we're coming out of, you know, some economic turmoil. Inflation is slowed down, so we missed recession, but that doesn't mean prices are going down. People are a little bit concerned or a lot bit concerned. And we've seen historically, particularly in the US, that this is the time where people want to feel good. So products that make you feel good, whether it's humorous products, where it's something that you get to give your dog because your fur baby makes you feel good, or for your actual baby. You know, as a parent, when things are tough, you can feel a little bit more empowered because you can give gifts to your children. All these things make you feel good. And right now, feeling good is probably something we're going to be looking at product-wise for at least the next 6-12 months. So I'm looking at all the comments about your story from the newsletter, and now I've got to go back and read it.
Yeah, I'd love to get your input on that one. That was kind of crazy. But you know what? Just listening to you start talking about these feel-good products, you know what it reminds me of? COVID. When we came out of COVID, it's almost the same type of products that are going to be people are looking for and developing right now. Feel-good products.
100%. If you look all the way back to the Great Depression, a terrible time in history, fabulous time for Hollywood. You know, that's when all the great comedies and the musicals started coming out and so on. We see the same thing with products. This is a great time for people to be a little bit more creative with their products. You know, everyone knows how important it is to differentiate. If you figure out differentiation that makes you smile or makes your husband or wife smile, say, wait a second, I'm on the right track here. That's great. Because as you know, I believe strongly that everything begins with the product. And if you can develop a product that makes people feel a little bit better during these tough times, you got a winner and you're doing good.
Now, is part of the product the packaging? Are you doing something to make the packaging a little bit brighter, a little bit, it'll just stand out, have that feel good feel as well?
Spot on, particularly if you're looking to expand into retailers. You know, when you're selling to retailers, that box on that shelf, that is the same as your listing. So that box, obviously, it's when you look at creating that box and the unboxing experience and everything online, you have a specific goal. It's a different set of goals when you're selling to retailers, but that box, that's what's going to get people's attention. And once again, you just, you know, you try to imbue it with that, with the emotions. Years ago, back when I had hair and I was skinny, I did fashion photography. And I had a chance to work with Renzo Castiglione in Milan. He's the guy that started the magazine Maxim and a bunch of other magazines. Famous art director, creative director. And when I showed up, I had my portfolio from New York and everything was technically perfect. And he looked at my portfolio and he said exactly that. It's technically perfect. And he showed a picture I had taken of a bride and a groom together with a beautiful bridal dress. And he goes, that's perfect. But then he stopped. He goes, but what is she feeling? I want to know, how does she feel about herself? Is she happy? Is she confident? Does she feel sexy? Is she nervous? He wanted to know what those emotions were that came through on the photograph. And I didn't show any of that because I had come from New York where we would focus just on the technicalities. But I was there for a year and a half in Milan, starving artist. And I learned so much. And I was able to bring all of those emotions into the photographs. And I thought this was brilliant because the, you know, greatest art director, creative director in the world was telling me what I should be doing to get my photographs better. And they were, and everything else. And until we were at a party one night and I was talking about how much I love that he changed my business like that. And he explained to me that the reason for the emotions is because that's what makes people buy stuff. Emotions sell. So it wasn't just that he's being artistic. Emotions sell. And we see that ourselves. We see that with lifestyle photos. We see that with product design. And certainly when you go into retailers, that package, which is getting people's attention on the shelves, if that has emotion on that package, and if that emotion makes people feel good, if that emotion shows people what they're enjoying about their product, it sells.
Emotionally, and right now, I'm trying to think about you with hair.
Emotionally, I miss it.
me too. So can you give us a case study? Have you seen something, a product that was able to get either revised or rebranded or something, and the changes that made?
Yeah, we I'll have to give you guys a link to this. Just launched a product last month in January. One of my students who she's been trying a few times, and she comes to me with different ideas and over the years. And I am terrible because if it's not something that I think is really going to work, I'll tell her I don't think it really is going to work. She got frustrated with me. But just about this time last year, she came to me with a variation on a Christmas tree. Everyone loves Christmas. It's a great time of the year. And it took about 2 weeks. I went through, I said, yeah, this can work. We made some changes so we could have protectable IP on it. And then with a few flights back and forth to China, we were able to launch it on January 14th, selling to retailers. And on the very first day, a retailer came in, they saw it, and they loved it. So it's a furniture store with 431 stores. They wanted 6 per store, and we wholesale at $250. That's $646,500 on a feel good, make your children feel good, happy product. Astounding. It literally, that visit occurred within the first 10 minutes of VIP day. I was dumbfounded. I've never seen anything like that. Now, put it in perspective, once you get into a big box store, Target, I mean, you can easily wake up to $1 million purchase order. But for the debut of a new product, to have something like that, now we have to go through all the processes. Anyone who says you get into big box stores overnight, it's a lot of wishful thinking. It takes a while, jump through hoops. Maybe it'll be this Christmas or next Christmas, but my goodness. And that is exactly an example of something that makes you feel good, that makes your children feel good. And it resonated. And that can resonate across online, in stores, in catalogs, and so on. Just makes people happy.
You know, I know Steve, and he just heard me talk about this in a different mastermind, but I was talking about brown bag products and different ways. Like, I love just selling brown bag products, you know, and for that reason, I'm going to give an example. So we had a client come to us, and they were selling this package that I wish I had a picture of it right now, but it was a powder blue with a yellow foot and oil dripping from the foot. Okay. So it looked, and this was like a foot treatment, right? Like a nail treatment, wart treatment. And it, when you opened it up, there was 2 brown bottles that you couldn't read the logo. You couldn't read anything about anything, but all you saw is like step 1, step 2, and they were brown, and it looked like it was for medicinal purposes. So we took it, and exactly what you said about feel good. We said, why are we trying to sell an ugly toe with warts all over it, oozing yellow oil? So we changed it into a health product, a wellness product. And the actual product itself smelled incredible, but it made it just with the bottles, it looked horrible. So we changed it to white, crisp greens and blues to make it look like it's more healthy. We changed the messaging from medicinal into have beautiful feet, have beautiful nails, have beautiful, like it's a whole lifestyle change, different shift in your thought. And we changed the bottles to green with the white labels, same sort of thing, crisp greens and blues. So when we relaunched it, this product never sold anything for 18 months, less than 1,000 units. We relaunched that first month, we got $7,000. Next month we got, I think it was 27,000. Month after that it was 68, and it peaked out at $124,000. That is just something by changing the messaging from, I feel embarrassed getting this, you know, I want to put it in a brown bag, I don't want to go to a pharmacy and pick it off the shelf, to, I love this. Like, it's going to make me feel good inside. So exactly what you said.
It's emotions sell, as Renzo told me. And it's so, so true. That's why we're also seeing things happening with toys as well these days, and pets and so on. And, you know, if you're comfortable with AI, and I'm far from comfortable with AI, you can take these trends and push them even further.
Yeah.
This is just a super, super exciting time. And frankly, it's also a great time for people to be getting involved in this business, whether it's online or in stores. And I always encourage people to expand into stores, But this is a great time to be involved in this business. There are challenges out there. And if you know how to do your business right, if you are being creative, if you're thinking beyond just staying within the box, you can compete and win while everyone else gets knocked down. I have a friend who's had an uncle, I think it was his uncle, bought a whole lot of real estate in downtown LA after the riots and you know, made an entire empire out of it. This is the time where people, you know, oh yeah, Amazon's taking so many fees and now they've got these ridiculous new things. This is the time to jump in, both feet deep in the water, and say, let's do this and do it right.
So I think right now, I'll get another example of pet products. So right now, kids, outdoors, travel, pets, feel good products, like you said, are moving the line. And so I was talking with Kevin King the other night, and his dog had some problems and it had to have a cone. But when I looked at the cone, it was like this designer cone with little ears on it. I mean, it was hilarious, but people will pay the extra money just instead of having that plastic cone that goes around their dog's head. And another example, and I want to make sure I'm 100% transparent here. This is about Colin Campbell, the guy that wrote the book, Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat. And he started a pet business and it was doing pretty good. It got to $10 million. Revised it, launched it. It's premium product. It's double, triple what people are paying on as an average on Amazon. If it's $30 to $60, his is $150 to $240. So premium products. The reason I'm saying this is people are willing to pay a lot more for perceived value. If you have a high perceived value, you can kill it on e-com and you can kill it in retail. He went from, and I'm not saying anything he didn't say on this podcast, he went from 10 million to 45 million in sales in less than a year and a half using retail to launch the second stage of the product. Just crazy.
Pets are huge. I had a pet product a few years back. So my ex-wife was disabled and we got a little service dog. And I say ex-wife, and just for the record, we're still friends and text and everything else. But that little service dog changed our life. And the first night with the dog, she climbed in the bed and then I climbed in the bed. And the little dog jumped on the bed, stretched out, took over half the bed. And she moved over. I got squished into the side. And then I got the look, which means accept it. This is reality. Don't complain. Shut up and live your life. But I always take a sense of humor towards things. And I was in a flower shop of all things. And they had a set of pillowcases that said Romeo and Juliet, Mr. Right and Mrs. Always Right, and all sorts of cute little things. And I said, do you have any that says, you know, it says her side, does it have the dog side? And the guy laughed and he goes, no, but if we did, we'd sell a million of them. And that was a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
I went home. I told my wife about it, laughed, got up around 4 o'clock in the morning and started looking. I could not find anything like that. So, and I had a team that worked in China at the time and I'd already done stuff in China. I was working at Microsoft. We had a good team here. And by the time the sun came up, I had my entire business plan worked out, started to find graphic artists. And I came up with a company called Dog Snores, pillowcases for people who let the dog sleep on the bed. Now, I'm going to talk about the humor and everything else, but the numbers, 52% of dog owners in the U.S. let the dog sleep on the human bed, which means dog crates, dog kennels, dog beds, dog houses combined is only 48%. So this was a huge market. And for small dogs, 72%. But the humor part of it is what made people interested. So came up with the first set, and the first set had two pillowcases, split the bed in half. One half said, the dog sleeps here. The other said, the wife sleeps here. And the very edge squished in said, the husband sleeps here with the font all jumbled up and everything. That was The first product line, we had a whole bunch of these, all same sense of humor. First ones that got to Bed Bath & Beyond. First ones that was over $1 million in profits, not in, just in sales. And that was huge. Sense of humor, looking at real life, not inventing something new. I didn't invent the pillowcase. I just made some interesting variations that would work. Now, I've told this story a few times. It's in my book and so on, but I'll share with something with you that I haven't told anyone. And that is anyone who goes to Bed Bath & Beyond or any other, this was also on Francesca's, eventually in Belk. Anyone who buys pillowcases at the store knows that you feel them just like the sheets and everything else. But when you're buying online, you can't. You can't right. feel it. And when you're selling something online, there's a good chance it's going to be copied and ripped off, which ours was. Ours was copied and ripped off by me. I created a second company, and I made pillowcases that instead of being 330 thread count cotton, were 85 GSM polyester with cute little sayings on them and everything else. So whether you were buying it online, whether Catalog Classics, who had a lot of our cotton pillowcases for a while, then reached out to see if they can get the less expensive polyester ones, had no idea it was the same company, had no idea they were talking to me. But we just competed against ourselves and ended up making a whole lot more money with that.
Wow. And that's just taking an opportunity and acting on it. So we were talking about this with Rob Green the other day, and he was just saying there's lots of opportunities out there. You can have lots of good intentions, but it's the people that take action that make the profit. So congrats. By the way, I can't see a lot of people, but I can see certain people. And Maria or Marie O'Shea, it's great to see you. I haven't seen you on here in a while. So nice seeing you back. Okay, it's time. If you're new to the podcast, and we have a ton of people listening right now, we do something at the top of the hour, which is called the Wheel of Kelsey. It's a giveaway that our guests give to one of our listeners, if you're live. And if you want to enter that, it's hashtag Wheel of Kelsey. Tag two people, and you'll get a second entry. Today, Stephen, what do we got?
We're going to do a free coaching session.
Perfect.
People move along with their products, their business. That's what the incubator is all about. It's taking you from one place and helping you get to the next one. It's all yours. There you go.
Very good. And so if you can get a coaching call from one of the top experts, I'm talking, Stephen is extremely knowledgeable. That call would be priceless. So if you're interested, hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, tag two people, and you'll get a second entry. All right. So I just talked about Colin Campbell. Kelsey, I'm going to just do a quick spot here on Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat. So Colin Campbell is a very good friend of mine. The brand I was just talking about is only one of the smaller things that Colin's done. He's had a crazy life. I think he was in his 20s when he sold his one business, Two Cows, for around nine figures. Crazy, just absolutely crazy story. The guy is sharp. He every time he goes into something, he's 2 feet, and he's had failures, and he's had huge successes, and he's had some huge failures. But he explains it in this book, Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat. I've said it before, and a lot of our listeners have bought this book. It is probably one of the top business books I've ever read. It stayed in pretty much any business category on Amazon. I think there's 15 different categories. It became number one instantly in Toronto, in Canada, for business, small business, entrepreneurship. But it's the way that he laid it out. So there's four components: start, scale, exit, repeat. Within that, it's a 400 page book. Each one of these is broken down into story, people, money, and systems. And within that, there's subcategories. So I told Colin, I said, this is like a referral guide for entrepreneurs. And he said, don't call it a referral guide for entrepreneurs. That's what I call it. If you are looking, if you're a new entrepreneur, medium-sized, advanced, if you've been in the entrepreneur like I have for 30, 40 years, I can refer back to this and go, oh yeah, I forgot about that. It's laid out perfectly, lots of illustrations. And also, it's 400 pages, 200 plus interviews. Vern Harnish is interviewed. The CEO of Reebok has been interviewed. There's 200 people. So check it out. You can go to Amazon and it's available on Kindle and hardcover, softcover. It's also on Audible. All right. So let's go back. My wife just brought me a cup of coffee. Thank you, Connie. All right, Stephen, we're back. Now let's talk a little bit about the mistake. No, not the mistakes. Let's talk about some action steps that people can take to make sure that when they're doing product development, that they're on track.
First, number one, I love this. I mean, this is, I'm supposed to be retired. I love doing this. I know you love doing product development, but at the end of the day, we have to think about making money. You have to think about profits. No matter, I've done some consulting on a product that actually helps decrease world hunger, literally world hunger. And it's an insect-based meal or insect-based protein that would replace fish, a meal that's used for chickens and hogs and so on. So you don't have to worry about eating, the animals will eat it. But it's absolutely brilliant. And that has to make money. You can't just say we're all going to give away our time and our lives. Everything has to make money. So number one, think profits. And these days, actually this year, because January a year ago, the front page of the Seattle Times, where I live, was all about Amazon. Amazon now takes more than 50% of sellers' money. And, you know, Lina Khan and the FTC, they're not too happy about that. And now it gets even worse. So when you compare that to retailers, who traditionally keystone, that means they double what they're paying. So if you see something on the shelf for $50, they pay $25. You're looking at the exact same numbers.
Right.
So for years, the tradition has been for retailers that you need at least a 7x multiplier. Whatever that retail price is, when it comes out the factory door, it should be 1/7 or less. These days, you need to be thinking about Amazon the same way. The days of 1/3, 1/3, 1/3 is.
You're so right. Bang on. That is actually a perfect stat. 7-1. That's awesome.
It is. And now people do ask me, what about, does that include shipping or not? I got to tell you, a couple of years back, we all learned we can't control shipping. We wish we could, but that was a nightmare. But you can control your product. And when you make that development, you can make choices. You can make trade-offs. You can decide what you're going to do, and you can build better relationships with your supplier, get better prices. Once you know where you have to be, once you know that you're going for a 7x multiplier, now all of that becomes easy because you know what your goal is. You know what that number is that you need to achieve. And if you can't achieve it, you get up and walk away.
So, Stephen, can I interrupt you for a second?
Do that.
So when you're talking about this, a lot of people get products from China. A lot of really great sellers on here, and they go to China or they go to a country and they, you know, all of a sudden the manufacturer is up against them, or you think the manufacturer is up against you on Amazon. And then you complain that how can I compete if somebody's selling direct? You absolutely 100% can compete. I don't think I've ever worried about my manufacturer coming to compete because they're going after a different market. Unless they're going after a high perceived value, which we can easily, I love competition. So if they're coming out the gate at the same time I am with the same traffic and with bring it on. You don't have to worry. And you might be a completely different view on this. I'm not sure, but I love perceived value. If the manufacturer is coming out at $10, why not sell mine for $49?
Perceived value is everything. If you took a jersey, and it's a little chilly here today, so I get to use this example. You put a jersey or shirt or a hoodie on and it keeps you warm, that's great. But if you put on that hoodie and it's a Lionel Messi hoodie, that's going to sell for twice the price as anyone else. Does it keep you any warmer? No. But it's got the perceived value of being greater, right, and bigger because it's got that name on it, which, by the way, if people are curious about how to do that, this May is going to be the licensing show in Las Vegas. People should go there if you've never gone there before. That's how you find out about how to do things like put Disney princesses on your paper cups and stuff like that. It's a way of adding that perceived value. But it's also, you said a few other things, and there was absolute gold. A lot of people say, how do I compete with a Chinese factory? They're gonna sell at a lower price and compete with me and everything else. I'd mentioned I'm talking Alibaba in just a day and a half, 2,000 suppliers. And they've been generous enough with me that I get to stand in front of those suppliers and ask that exact question. Say, don't compete against the people who are buying from you. Don't steal their photos from their website, and so on. And to take that to the next step, if you want loyalty from the people who are buying from you, talk to them about exclusivity so that they don't find that you're competing against them. Have that communication. Where are there areas that we can find and put extra value in? Everyone thinks, oh, China's going to compete with price. I got to tell you right now, we as a culture have advantage over the Chinese culture. If and I know you've been here, you've seen little children compared to children in the U.S. and Canada and Australia. There are children here that rarely say the word no. From the time they're infants, they're brought up in a culture that is very strict. Stay within the lines. Don't be rebellious. Don't go crazy. And that, frankly, it stifles creativity. So when you go to your supplier and you've got something that's different, that's unique, that you've worked on, they're eager to find out about that because you can do that, they can't. So you need to take basic IP precautions. Don't be sending it out to 70 different suppliers saying, this is my new unique, this is the latest and greatest little, you know, Steven guy, because they're all going to copy it. But if you're smart about protecting your IP, now you have a product that's going to be different. You have a product that they cannot do, that they cannot compete with. And now things get really beautiful. Everyone says you want a relationship with your supplier, and they're absolutely correct. You want a relationship with your supplier. But to paraphrase that movie, Love Actually, relationship's a broad term. It means a lot of things. It's not always a good thing. You want a relationship where you're getting value from them and they're getting value from you. So if you're the only one that's got this idea and you've taken something and you've differentiated in a way that's really cool and wonderful and no one else is doing it and customers want to buy it, they want to do business with you. They want you to succeed because the more you sell, the more they sell. And they're not going to balk at doing an NNN or anything because they don't want the guys down the street keep doing the same thing that they're doing with you. So if you bring value to that relationship, I have had, I would be thrilled to say if I could promise it every single time, but I've had just in the last year, I've had three of my students have their suppliers come to them volunteering to bring the price down. You're not even saying we need to get the price down. They want to make sure that it's a good relationship where they're money making money off of you making money. That's not competing. That's one she. That's working together.
Yeah. Also, what I would recommend if you are, and we've talked about this probably a few years ago a lot, but making sure that that IP, that trademark, is protected. You go to China, or go to China, you get a Chinese trademark or wherever in the world that you're getting it manufactured, just to make sure that it's protected in the country that you're getting it manufactured, so it can leave port, because it there could be problems if you have somebody who's a troll and ends up trademarking your product. There could be issues. So it's very inexpensive to get a trademark over in China and many other countries around the world, but just China for sure. One other thing I wanted to point out,
jump in there for one quick.
Yeah, sure.
Second. Okay, that's a terrible thing, and it does happen in China. But hell, do it yourself. Once you're trademarked in China, it's called recordation. Record your trademark with customs. So now, if your stuff ends up going out the back door or on the streets of Hong Kong, and someone tries sending it out of China, if you're not the consignee on that trademark, they can't get it out of the country. And it's your trademark. And if they do a red envelope and it gets out of the country, do an e-recordation in the United States. $190 for 10 years, that's $19 a year. And if it comes in and you're not the consignee on that trademark, it gets seized. Doesn't work for patents, works for trademarks, and it also works for copyrights. Inexpensive, simple.
Gold.
You're spot on, but we can do the same thing against bad actors.
So I'd love you to add some more content to our newsletter about that. That would be fantastic. One other thing before you get back to the action list. We got to step one. One other thing I want to let our listeners know, that when you're developing that product, when you're in product development stage, I've done this and it's killed me a few times, is that if you come out with innovative product, whether it's digital or if it's a physical product, a lot of the times, if you're coming out with something brand spanking new, you got to put a lot of money to make sure that the marketing, the brand, what the usage of the product is, it's a tough uphill battle. Usually what happens is that idea kind of goes into the ground, and as people adapt a little bit later on, then other people seize the idea and come out with variations, leaving you in the dust. And just for a quick example, came out with, you ever go along the highways and you see the burlap that goes down so the grass can go through? Yeah. Well, me and a friend invented that, got a patent on it. Waited the time span, we couldn't get the money or get anybody interested in it, no governments. And then right as soon as the patent ended, every government out there, every road service out there was using the product. And now whoever is producing it is probably fairly wealthy, not us. But that's just an example. So don't go after something that's an uphill battle. Find something, improve on it, and then move forward with it. Make it better.
We are, Alex Charfin says, we are, you know, unique. We are the next evolution of people. Entrepreneurs, by our own nature, we are risk takers. We have to be courageous. We have to be brave, because what we're doing is absolutely crazy. So that's not the time to hold back. Take a risk, be brave. You've got a great idea, move forward. I think you sat in on our class with us when we had a fellow coming in from a mergers and acquisition firm talking about Bodman. Were you in that particular class sitting in that day?
Oh, I'm not sure. I've been in a lot of classes.
So Bodman is a body spray, and it's aimed towards 14-year-old boys. So the sprayer looks like it's used for tire cleaner. It's industrial. You can imagine some kid coming out of the shower spraying it over half of his body. It's where Axe used to be until their customers got jobs and they moved their marketing upwards. It was a great opportunity for them to come in. And this particular M&A firm saw that they knew what they were doing. They fixed them up, made sure they were able to, you know, deliver on time in full to their retailers and so on. edit a couple of other products. There was a female, what was it called? Body Fantasy. And it's just cheap. It's just, you know, a liquid with a little bit of fragrance in it. So they did the same thing for Epsom salts, and they called it Dr. Teals because that sounds even fancier. So they bought this for $100 million. They bought Bodman. By the way, the fragrances, one of the fragrances is called Really Ripped Abs. That tells you exactly who they're going for. So they paid $100 million. They actually paid $100 million for 85%. Two bites of the apple. They let the entrepreneur keep 15%. 5 years later, and this is all, you know, Google, these are real brands. 5 years later, they sold it for $1.4 billion. These entrepreneurs took the chance and went for it. That got large cap deal of the year. And as he tells the story, the guy who was answering the phone for customer service walked away with $1 million in his pocket. This is taking a chance, understanding your customer, marketing, back to that feel-good thing we were talking about earlier, but being brave and saying, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
$1.4 billion, perfume decor. You can look it up. And it's still being sold in Walmart, CVS, and so on.
Okay. I am not going to interrupt you, but let's do a rapid fire round on the action steps that we started. And then I rudely interrupted you several times.
So the action steps to,
the action steps to bringing a product to market.
Okay. So when you bring a product to market, particularly for retail, there's a few things you have to think about that's different than selling on Amazon. The great thing is Amazon sellers are 80% of the way there. And frankly, the mistakes that my Shark Tank clients make are mistakes that Amazon sellers would never make because you guys already know it. You just got to get that final 20 yards. So number one, retailers only have a set amount of shelf space. Amazon has forever. So I get to use my little mini me. If you have a mini me, and you have another mini me from an, you know, you're competing, retailers don't want that because someone's going to come in, they're only going to buy one. And that space could be dedicated to something else that also makes money. So once you're in a retailer, you're not going to have competitors out there. But by the same token, you can't go in there and say, oh, I've got another mini me or cell phone case. You have to differentiate, and it's got to be something people want. Amazon, on the other hand, you could get 100 of these. Please, I'll do a royalty agreement. And Amazon loves it because you're all going to compete against each other with PPC. So it doesn't help you. It only helps Amazon. Number one, differentiate. Number two, we already talked about, needs to be profitable. Number three, the retailer, when the retailer buys from you, is a client, not a transactional sale. So that means that when you sell to that retailer, you're selling in whatever multiples you're selling, whether it's by container or by case pack, and then they're going to buy again and again and again and again. So that sale, as it grows and another one grows, another one grows, it really hockey sticks up fast. So be aware of that. That's where you need, frankly, you do not need professionals to tell you how to get in front of retailers. And if you have a great, compelling product, they're going to say yes, but you do need professionals who are going to manage that because you don't get to walk away from it like you do on Amazon. Number four, packaging. Packaging is the same as your listing. Someone's going down the aisle, they're looking at their cell phone, they've got kids and everything else. That packaging has got to get their attention and it's got to sell the product. And most important, it's got to explain the product. They say something like 74% of consumers, when they see packaging, will make a decision to purchase based on that packaging without any research. That means they're not going online to compare it. They're looking at it and making a decision. And the fascinating thing is, and you can stand at the end of any aisle of any store and watch this, people will pick up a product. They're going to look at it. They're going to make a judgment. Is this something that I want, that I need? Is it going to help me? Whatever. And the last thing they do is they take a look at that price. And if the price is right, then they throw it into the cart. So that comes back to the, one of the things we talked about at the very beginning, that 7x multiplier You need to know what customers are going to pay, and then you make yourself 7x so that you're profitable at that price. By the way, notice what I did not say. Go to any store, Canada, Australia, US, with the exception of power tools and a couple of other things, nobody's looking to see, does it say made in China? They don't care. Online, they'll talk about it. But when it comes to buying stuff for their family, for their homes, they're not looking. They're not squinting to see that. They want to see, is it a good price? So you want to make sure that it's differentiated enough. You want to make sure that the packaging is correct. You want to make sure that the pricing is correct. There's little things such as understanding case packs and multiples and so on. That's all distribution and so forth. And you want to make sure that once that sale is made, it's being able to be managed going forward. It's really not more difficult than that.
Very good. Okay, we got three questions. Kelsey.
Okay, so first one is from Rad. How can we prevent Chinese manufacturers and Amazon from copying products even after investing a significant amount of money on patents? Are there any effective measures we can take to address this issue and safeguard our intellectual property?
Yeah, there's a bunch. And by the way, I was in Guangzhou a couple of days ago, and I met a couple of people while I was waiting for the elevator. They were obviously speaking. They were Westerners, one from Melbourne, one from New York. What were they there? I was talking to them. They were there because they work for Amazon, and they are there meeting with factories to get them to sell on Amazon. That's what their job is. And I have some video from Chris Davey from a few years back where they're Amazon evangelists from stage telling you that. So yes, they're being encouraged to sell. So I'm gonna read this here. How do we prevent Chinese manufacturers from copying products even after investing a significant amount of money on patents? Okay, so who is copying them? When you see that Amazon is copying them, sometimes that's just a one-piece seller. And it says sold by Amazon, but it's a one-piece seller. They're using the exact same tools. Go after them. They're son of a bitch. Crush them. If it's the factory itself, you want to make sure that you've got your legal agreement set up. China is a communist country. They do not want to be the nail that stands up, whereas United States, we're litigious. Everyone wants to go to court. Nobody wants to do that in China. So you can threaten them, and they'll often back down. In fact, in China, not only will the business back down if you threaten them, but their attorneys get black marks as well. So attorneys don't want to represent someone who's constantly losing. So you don't think that you have to have a $200,000 to protect your patent. Sometimes it just is a case of threatening them in China, and they will back down. Even after investing a great amount of patents, any effective measures we can take to address this issue and safeguard our intellectual property? We had just talked about recordation. Here's another one. This is swag from Alibaba. I'm looking for a good example. I'm going to use Mini-Me again. So let's say you come out with Mini-Me, good looking guy here, no hair, not a great beard, but has potential. And someone else comes out with a similar one, maybe in a blue suit instead of a black suit. If that goes on sales on Amazon, guess what? You have the ability to compete against that. It's a little known part of the trademark law called trade dress. And if there is a product that somebody else puts out there that couldn't be confused with your product, they are now a violation of trade dress. Amazon is fabulous as a very easy way to put in complaints. But frankly, all of these are legal situations, and you can pursue people legally. And when you win, copyright infringement, if you've registered your copyright, certainly patent infringement, trademark infringement, you'll get triple damages. That means if somebody's selling the little Mini-Me for $100 each, and maybe it's costing him $90 to get the little model, he's only walking away with $10 at the end of the day, he still has to pay triple damages on that $100. That's legal. People will turn around quickly. A patent's only strong as the depth of your pockets. Not true. Sorry, Alejandro. I'll give you a great example. I had a patent. I was able to defend it. I used Lee and Hayes. one of the top patent litigation firms. Patent litigation is a branch of patent law where they're just attorneys going out and fighting people and stuff like that. What happens is the very first, everyone thinks when you have a patent, you see this with cell phones and stuff like that. When you have a patent fight in courts and everything, everyone's saying, well, it looks like this, and no, it's like that, and it's a judgment call. It's not, it's subjective. They don't want to do that. They want to be objective. They want to keep it black and white, which means the very first thing that's going to happen if you pursue someone for infringing on your patent is they're going to come back and look at you. You're going to look at them. Are they selling something that infringes? Yes, black and white. If you, the other way around, they're going to say, can we violate or invalidate your patent? And that's black and white as well. Did you cross every I, across every D, T, dot every I on the filing, on the wrapper, and so on? Are the figures correct? I've both fought and I've defended patents. And in no case did it, in fact, the most it ever cost me was $21,000, because that's what they focus on, the black and white stuff. All the big, oh, I get a judge to make a decision or a jury to make a decision, that's super expensive. But it's when it comes to real life, really defending patents or pursuing patents, it comes down to black and white, just making sure you've got a good attorneys who know how to go after the objective, not the subject aspect of a patent.
All right, next.
All right, this one is a comment from Simon. As brand owners, we have so many opportunities and different routes to market, retailers, e-commerce, marketplaces, and so on. The key is to only bite off what you can chew step by step. And we've got a comment from...
So when you say bite off what you can chew step by step, how do you perceive that? Whoever it is that asked that
question. Yeah, I think that was Simon.
Simon. So Simon, what do you mean by the key is to bite off only what you can chew?
He should get back to us shortly.
All right. Follow up, Simon.
So let's stay on that for a second. If you're focusing on a good product, then you know, protecting that and getting it out there and selling it and everything, focus on that product. When you launch it, launch the simplest version possible. Start off at your base level, but understand already in your mind where you're going to be at version 2, version 3, and so on, just like in Peter Thiel's book, 0 to 1. Start off here, know where you're going to go here and here and here. So when you're biting off what you should chew, just bite off enough so that you're in version 1. But you can launch it on Amazon. You can launch it in your own stores. You can launch it in small and independent retailers. Move it along, get momentum, then get into bigger retailers. There's no reason, if you develop that product properly, that you need to treat any of those any differently than each other. In fact, the hardest part of all of those is launching your own Shopify site, because the cost of customer acquisition is huge compared to a retailer who wants to get people into the store, compared to Amazon, where people are going and looking and you understand how to do keyword search. So focus on the bite as being the product that you're launching, not on the platforms that you're selling in. And it's going to grow fast.
Okay.
Alrighty. Let me see. Just to follow up Simon's comments, make sure you have the operations in place, have access to capital. If you bite off too much, you can quickly run out of time and money.
The most important person on your team is going to be your accountant. Absolutely. You want to start getting cash flow analysis from day one. There are ways, particularly it's easier, frankly, when you're selling to retailers or if you're selling Amazon vendor rather than Amazon marketplace, it's a lot easier to get financing because now you have purchase orders and signed invoices and negotiable instruments and so on like that. And that you can finance off of easily, but you need to have an accountant who's going to tell you if this is where how you're going to grow over the next year. Be aware that that point you take on a larger retailer or the point that you take on a second product line, suddenly you're going to be going into the red. You may be a half a million up on a Tuesday, and by Thursday, you're $500,000 down because you've got to invest all of that. Know those numbers beforehand. This is, boy, controversial now. Everyone loves the same tools for research, but guys, those financials that they're giving you, you need to do them yourself. Don't trust them. Some of those calculations are way off from GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles. Get yourself an accountant. Understand, are you making money? Are you losing money? What's your cash flow? If you know your numbers, the rest of it will come a bit easier.
All right. So we've got about 5 minutes. I think we have a few more questions, Kels.
Okay, this one's from Spaghetti. Does it seem reasonable for beginners developing their first product to travel to China to meet the supplier? It's a pretty high cost of good and fairly risky product.
Okay, so I'm going to say two things in here. Again, I'm not afraid of controversy. So when you go to China and you meet your supplier and you go to a factory and you learn how something's made, that's knowledge. That's information. That is golden. The more you know, the more you can make smart decisions and so on. You're also going to hear a lot of people tell you that when you go to China and you visit your factory, you visit your supplier, you're going to save 10, 15%, 20% sometimes right off the bat. And this is where I'm going to get a lot of people pissed off. That's not the case. Not the case with any of my folks. If you negotiate with your supplier and you're doing all the things that whoever it is telling you to do things on YouTube or in courses or on a stage or whatever, and then they say, go to China, you're going to save 10, 15, 20%. That's a red flag. Chinese sellers, they're not going to lose money. They're not going to be one of these people say, we're going to sell for a year losing money just because you're learning. They do not want to lose money. Therefore, if you show up in their door all pretty and beautiful and walk through their front door and they say, well, I'm glad you're here, here's 20%. That's because they had 20% sitting on the table from day one, from the very first time that you made a deal with them. You were screwed. You didn't even realize it, that you were overpaying. And that money's been sitting there. And now that you walk in the door, that is a sign of respect and recognition. They're saying, here's 10% or 15% or 20%. But the reality is it's been sitting there since day one. If you negotiate properly, it's not sitting there for anyone to get. And you've got lower prices. And now when people say, oh, Chinese sellers get lower prices than us, it's not fair. No, nobody particular strange in China. They are super, super friendly, but oftentimes not to each other. Nobody's going to turn around and give a Chinese seller a better deal. It's the Chinese seller understands how business is done. So yes, is it smart and reasonable to travel to China? You're going to learn so much. The investment in yourself and your knowledge and everything else. You can understand, let's say you're doing a fabric and you understand that you could turn around and save, you know, 50% because you've got an omnidirectional pattern instead of a directional pattern because it's less fabric wasted. You're going to learn all of that by being there. That's brilliant. And by the way, sell something, please, before you leave to China, so that your accountant can come back and say it's in the pursuit of income, the intent to make money, and you can deduct the whole thing. But don't go there thinking you're going to save 15, 20% just because you walk in the door. That tells you that you've been negotiating the wrong way from the get-go.
All right. I think it's our last question.
All right. Last one is more of a comment from Alejandro. Thank you, Norm. I believe ROI is a better indicator of the viability of any product. You can achieve 100% ROI with a 3X. It all depends on the prices of the products you are selling.
Oh, did you tee this guy up for me?
Yeah, I asked Alejandro to do that.
Alejandro, thank you. ROI. I'm lucky I went to a really prestigious business school in the U.S. called Wharton. ROI, the calculation for ROI is what you get in minus what you spend over what you spend. That's ROI. Unless you learn from certain tools or certain wizards and certain other things that Amazon can have you figure out, suddenly they're kind of forgetting half of that equation. Now it's what you get over what you spend. So I have seen a course, the same course, using two examples. One, you're bringing in 70,000, it's costing you 50,000, over 50,000, that's a 40% ROI. And in the exact same program, 70,000, over 50,000, now that's 140% ROI. Know your numbers. ROI is probably one of the most bastardized calculations within the Amazon FBA community. That's why you want an accountant. You want someone who's doing it accurately for you. So coming back to your question, 100% ROI is better than 3X. Brilliant. You're absolutely right. Look at your ROI. Look at your numbers. Look at how much is going into your pocket. And please, everyone, look at that calculation that you're using to figure out your ROI, because you want to have it correct. Alejandro was spot on. That's great advice. But if your calculation is wrong, it's not going to help you.
Perfect. Okay. So let me, before I get into the live read, let's get your contact information, Stephen.
Yes. Stephen at productdevelopmentincubator.com. And I still respond to the old one, productdevelopmentacademy.com. Reach out to me. You have questions and so on. I think most people have already experienced the fact. I'll say, hop on a call and I'll answer questions and point you in directions and stuff like that. Well, I'm always happy to have people sign up for my programs, but frankly, I'm happy to see people succeed. So if you have a question, always reach out. If it's something simple, I'm always happy to help.
Yeah. And I remember, like, you're one of these guys. That loves to share information. I remember talking to you when I first met you and said, why is this course so cheap? I think it was your mastermind. I said, how do you make money? And you mean, because you were giving out gold. And it was so inexpensive. And I thought, wow, this guy, he's the type of guy I like to hang around with. I mean, you know, you were just giving it out basically for free. Now, I want to touch on the product Academy Incubator. It's new. It's not new. It's rebranded. Within 30 seconds to a minute, you want to just talk a little bit about that?
Yes. A lot of people are just confused about what I do. I mean, I'll rail on and on about shipping and DDP and the fact that Matson is not a real service and all the rest of this. And next thing you know, people think I'm an expert in shipping, or I'll talk about marketing, or I'll talk about getting into retail, or I'll talk about human-focused product design and so on. By changing it to Product Development Incubator, when an incubator focuses on all of those steps, it's a better, clearer description of what it is that I do. Where are you? What do you need to get to the next step? That's what I'm here for.
Perfect. All right. It's time for the live read for Seller Basics. So just give me a second here. I'll just queue it up. Here we go. Hey, Amazon sellers, ever faced with account suspensions, ASIN hiccups, or IP headaches? Introducing Seller Basics, your Amazon accounts guardian. Which is $99 per month, or with code NORM, $89 per month, Seller Basics offers a dedicated team to shield your business from these challenges. Plus, this membership offers free legal consultations from seasoned e-commerce attorneys. No long-term contracts, cancel with just a month's notice. View Seller Basics as your Amazon accounts health plan. And if you want to check out Seller Basics, check it out at sellerbasics.com. Now for the disclaimer. Seller Basics is not an insurer or law firm. Consultations come from independent firms. Results may vary. Memberships are needed before events leading to the claims, and terms apply. Okay, so that's that. Now let's go to the wheel.
It's time for the Wheel of Health.
All right. Lots of people today.
Yeah, we got a lot of entries. We do this every single podcast too, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So make sure you come back to enter again. You're the winner. Please email me, kate@lunchwithnorm.com. And it looks like it's Rad.
Oh, Rad got it. Perfect.
All right. Congratulations, Rad.
Well, I don't know who you are, Rad, but I love your name.
So, and I know his products. That call with you is going to open up his eyes. So, anyway, I think that's it for today. Stephen, thank you so much for coming back. I haven't seen you in such a long time, so it was great to catch up with you before the call and during the podcast. It was very educational.
Want more great information? Don't forget to subscribe by clicking here. Also, if you want to check out our latest podcast, click over here. Lunch with Noah.